weapons were never in a position where they could have been armed and where they could have detonated. They were always safe. The fact is, however, that they were transferred from one base to another without the knowledge of authorities, and that was the problem. What the task force found was that there has been, throughout the Department of Defense, a lack of focus on the nuclear deterrent and the nuclear weapons which support that nuclear deterrent role that goes from the Office of the Secretary of Defense through the Office of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and into the Air Force and our overseas commands. The Navy has maintained a somewhat better focus. The commission was looking at the Air Force in its first phase report, which came out in August, and the second phase report, which came out just a few days ago, focused on the rest of the Department of Defense.
And what were the chief findings of the report? It sounds like you're leaning toward that there's really been an erosion and that there needs to be some real fresh attention on how we manage the chain of custody of the whole nuclear program.
I think that's exactly right. You said it very well. All missions have to have command focus and command attention. In this case, since nuclear weapons are uniquely weapons which can be authorized for use only by the President of the United States, this is an area where the President and the Secretary need to set a tone for the rest of the forces. It also means that the generals and admirals need to instill in their subordinates the absolute zero tolerance for error culture that used to exist about our nuclear forces.
And so when you say zero tolerance, what do you mean? For the incidents that we talked about, even though it wasn't exactly as described, that they were ready to be detonated, but still, that shows that there is very little or had been little attention paid by superiors to how these things were being handled?
It had eroded over time, and people were paying less and less attention. The traditional U.S. nuclear weapons culture has been one of zero tolerance for errors. There are checklists, there are procedures, all of which are designed to ensure that nothing unauthorized ever occurs. And for decades, we largely held to that kind of a track record. We slipped somewhat, and the Schlesinger Task Force has called for renewed emphasis at all levels of command, beginning at the very top, to ensure that every soldier, sailor, airman, or marine who touches nuclear weapons in any way, and that also includes senior policymakers, pays close attention to these weapons and to the rules and regulations which are created to safeguard them.
We're talking with Frank Miller. He's a task force member of the Task Force on Nuclear Weapons Management, which was just delivered to the President, President Bush, and now to President Obama. And, Mr. Miller, you were spent a long time at the Defense Department. You were on the National Security Council. Imagining what's going on as the new president learns more about his defense team and the National Defense Team and the Secretary of Defense and the top generals, how quickly does a president need to get up to speed on the details of the nuclear arsenal? I mean, most of the time the talk is about treaties to reduce nuclear dependence, and of course that's a great policy goal. But in the meantime, we have a lot of nuclear rivals throughout the world, and so we have to be realistic about the arsenal we do have. Is that one of the first things that happens for a new president?
Certainly. President Obama will probably by now have been briefed on the nuclear arsenal and on the various options which would be available to him in a severe national crisis. He has under him a team of excellent people who can assist him in making any decisions. Secretary Gates has really seized the nuclear weapons issue by the horns. He formed the task force. He has watched over the Air Force as it has responded to the recommendations in our August report. And I must say the Air Force leadership, Secretary Donnelly and General Schwartz, have shown admirable leadership skills in seizing those recommendations and putting them into action. So, yes, this is something the new administration will want to focus on, even as it thinks down the road about continuing nuclear reductions and probably new negotiations with the Russian government to reduce nuclear arsenals on both sides.
And were there assurances given to those countries that you just talked about the safety of our nuclear weapons? You know, obviously it raised concerns here just internally, as you mentioned, and concerns of the task force. But what about international reaction to all this?
The government of the United States has gone out and talked to its NATO allies, and indeed our report, the report just delivered, speaks to the safety and security of the weapons we have deployed in NATO countries. It says that they are safe and secure and meet or exceed all standards that we have. The contents of the report was briefed to our allies around the world, and I believe that allies are reassured by the fact that Secretary Gates took prompt action in the face of problems, and I think allies are impressed by the wide number of recommendations and are waiting to see how they are implemented.
And just a question, you know, this comes up every time there's an inauguration or some change in the administration, and there's someone with a briefcase that walks behind the president, as so the story goes, and in that is a button. But there's not really a button, is there? What kind of protocols are required before any thought could be given of arming any part of our nuclear weapons?
Well, in today's times, as opposed to during the Cold War, this is a bit of an anachronism, but it's still fairly important. As I said a few minutes ago, only the president of the United States has the authority or the ability to authorize the launch of U.S. nuclear weapons. There is a military officer who is always in close proximity to the president, who carries with him or her the various response options available to the president and the codes which would be necessary to transmit those response options to the Secretary of Defense and through him to the military for the use of those weapons. In the old days, during the bad old days of the Cold War, which we hope never to return to, that role was particularly crucial because there was always a concern about a surprise attack on the United States. Clearly, due to the demise of the Soviet Union, those possibilities have been dramatically reduced, and we are working to continue to reduce them. But the need to have somebody near the president in the event of some sort of unforeseen surprise attack by a major nation still remains, and that's why you have an individual who is in close proximity to the president.